Hello and welcome. You're listening to 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. Today is May 21st, and this is episode 85A. I am William Morgan, and as usual, I'm joined by the bane of my total existence, Douglas Bowles.
I love you too, Will.
I mean it, Doug.
Today, the program is echoing something we did a year ago. Last year on May 1st, we did two shows, one in the morning from the UK and one in the evening from New Zealand. Today, we're doing it again, and it's completely by accident.
Making me jump through hoops, man.
I know. I'm sorry, Will. The show is putting together all kinds of strange Philip K. Dick craziness in July, but I'm having a baby and I'm going to disappear. And so I just need to get all our ducks in a row. We had Sonic scheduled for July 2nd. And so I think we pushed him forward to just get it out of the way so that we you know, had room. But then it's like, oh, it makes so much sense to just do two shows today and have an 85A and an 85B.
Well, have you asked Sonic what we were planning on asking him?
No. But
well, let's do that now.
We'll,
I mean, we get the intro.
Let's just say, good morning, everyone. This is 42 Minutes, and Sonic is the host and creator of the Type 1 Radio Lounge, which can be found at blogtalkradio.com/Type 1 Radio Ashram. He is a producer and composer of experimental electronic music, and he comes from Brighton, England, and his music can be found at soundcloud.com/Sonicadia. How do you say that, Sonic?
Sonicadia. It's got a silent P.
Sonicadia. I've actually got it playing in the background right now. You're a DJ.
Yeah.
You mix, right? Are these sets or are these things that you do at home?
I DJ and I can.
What's that?
All that's my own work. So all the stuff on the SoundCloud page there is pretty much all my own tunes. But I also get to go and DJ at various other things. Like recently, I went to DJ down in Devon with the space rock gods Hawkwind. If you've heard of those.
Oh, awesome! Yeah.
Yeah, I have the fortune of knowing them for quite a number of years, so it's always good to go and help out those. Just on the tunes, I also release on a Brighton label called Pretty Neat Records, where you can find the Friendship Agenda album, it's a really good little label with Brighton artists on, and all the royalties go to help the mental health charity Mind. So a nice little thing, community-based activity.
Well, maybe the Friendship Agenda is the place to start.
Yep.
What is that?
Okay, so the Friendship Agenda was a concept born out of our good friend Freeman Fly from Freeman TV and the Freeman Perspective. He decided to set up this Facebook-like social network where people that listen to his shows could go and communicate and also get together with each other. So through that, I happened to meet the people that I co-host the show with, Steve and Fajic, who live less than a mile away from me. So we met on an American social networking site and live less than a mile away from
me. That's crazy. That's funny. That's what happened to Doug, too. That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So then after a couple of months, there was quite a lot of energy flowing within the creativity flowing. And I just had this idea. I was just listening to various radio shows and thinking, we could do this. So decided that we should. And so I set up the Type 1 radio and then gave people the voice, the opportunity to just have their own shows. So back in the early days, we had quite a lot of people just coming, you know, doing the intentional community shows and, you know, things like that. And the constant has been the lounge show, which is it's like the flagship show on a Saturday night called the Taiwan Radio Lounge, where we get that's where we get, you know, author. We've had Alan on quite a few times, and Andros Jones and Kyle Hunt, but then we've had other people like Ben Stewart, and he's actually come over through this. The synchronicities have just been absolutely amazing. Just going to talks and then through that meeting speakers and getting invited to festivals. You know, we had the opportunity last summer to broadcast from a few festivals, having guests on, which was pretty cool. I've met so many interesting people, and everybody's been lovely.
So then the enterprise Type 1 Radio, so you say the flagship show is Type 1 Radio Lounge. Yep. Where does the Type 1 come from?
Okay, so this was another term sort of hijacked by Freeman, in that there's a YouTube video of Michio Kaku talking about the types of civilization. A type 4 civilization, a sort of interstellar, and we're sort of verging on the type 1 civilization. We're type 0 at the moment, but through the advent of the internet as a communication tool, we can communicate through all around the world. And he was depicting this Type 1 civilization in a sort of powers that be structure. So through that, we sort of took it and decided to use it as a tool to create a Type 1 civilization that we want, rather than one that's dictated to us.
Cool.
Yeah.
Becoming the media.
Becoming the media. Synchronistically, I happen to be type 1 diabetic.
Well, so right, when I Googled type 1 to just find out what I'm trying to, you know, like, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, is because, you know, what is this whole thing? Is it a big collective? What's the deal here? And I Google type 1 and that's what I find is diabetes.
Yeah, we're not a diabetes support group. that is quite an irony in the name. we are a worldwide collective, really. You know, there's me and the two or three people in Brighton that have got together and doing the Saturday shows. But we've also got hosts in Illinois and New York and LA and various other places, Boston.
How hard is that to coordinate as far as time zones go?
Well, the good thing about Blog Talk is that it just changes all the time zones there for you. And, you know, we get 2 hours a day. I just give people the code to get in, that are doing regular shows, and to get into the site. They just do the shows. I don't really have to get involved a lot of the time, which is handy.
No kidding.
And that's the thing, that it's giving people the empowering the people to do what they want with it.
But now these are primarily live shows, so you listen as they're happening.
They listen as live, but also they're all archived quite neatly on Blog Talk. So we get more listens actually in the podcast sections than we do live.
We started out doing the live shows with 42 minutes too. It seemed like we discovered that our sound quality was better by recording them on Skype. It's fun to do it live and have people participate. We had people come and hang out in the chat room, and we miss you, Nexus of Sync.
Nexus was there every time. It was a beautiful thing. But yeah, there's too many problems that can arise when you do a live show. I kind of envy people who can pull it off, but I don't envy the stress of it at all. Hello?
Just had a big wave of silence. Did you guys...
Did you feel that?
just as Will's going into the things that could happen going live.
Yeah. Why do you work on...
See, yeah, that was like proof that shit could happen on a recording, too. That's funny.
Never. Ever.
So...
Yeah, We've had a lot of that on our shows, particularly when the guest has been quite interesting and maybe quite controversial. We had major problems when we had Judith Baker on, Lee Harvey Oswald's mistress,
right,
talking about the weaponization of the polio vaccines.
Wow. Yeah, that would cause some problems.
Book these shows? Are you the one who goes out and gets the guests and schedules everything?
Pretty much. I'm the one that can be bothered. But also, when we the good thing is that when we don't have guests on, we have what we call news bong, where we just get different interesting stories of the week and just have a chat about them. And that's basically what the lounge is. It's just a load of people getting together and having a little chat about what's going on.
Can you subscribe to this on iTunes and so that it would download automatically every week?
Yep. You can get it from iTunes. If you just search Type 1 Radio Ashram, all the podcasts will come up.
Oh, well, that sounds like something I need to put on my stuff. This sounds interesting.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I took me so long to figure it all out.
So, okay. So how we got in contact with you originally, Sonic, if you remember, was with your interview when you guys interviewed Sophia Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
So this brings us to our question. We actually, from the information you gave, has gotten in contact with Sophia Stewart. She's going to come on in July. But Doug,
excellent.
What's that?
Excellent.
Yes, thank you so much, man. But I got to ask another favor. Do you mind co-hosting with me?
I'd love to. I'd love to do that, my friend.
Awesome. Because like we said, Doug's going to be gone, so I need...
He's not gone. He's going welcoming his child into the world.
Little Rihanna Beyonce, she's a tiny dancer.
No, you wouldn't do that, would you? You wouldn't name her that, would you?
No, are you kidding? My wife would kill me.
Honey Boo Boo.
Honey Boo Boo.
Okay, but so now you don't produce the Type 1 Radio Lounge by yourself. You say you have two co-hosts that you met on the Freeman...
On the friendshipagenda.com, yes.
And it just so happened that they lived... not only in your part of the world, but near you, on your neighborhood, basically.
Like, literally down the road.
Well, would you like to add them to the call? We bring them in and open this up a little bit, and...
Yep, I will just add them now. Here we go.
And their names are...
Steve and Fajic. And they'll be coming up... And yeah, they live. Yeah, I could walk there in 10 minutes. interestingly, you were saying before about the last time you did this was May 1st last year, and your English the guy you were talking to was Mark Goulding.
That's
correct. We also know him.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, he lives around here as well. There's an artistic community in the next town called Lewis, a place called Zoo Studios, and we met him there through going to various talks and things. So I'll introduce you to Stephen Fajic. Hello.
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 Well, hello, guys. Welcome to 42 Minutes.
Wow. What a pleasure to be here. I've listened to you a couple of times and I love it. Obviously, big Sync fans.
Excellent.
Awesome.
So what have you been...
What have you been talking about here?
We feel like we've been kept in the dark.
I'm sorry. Our copywriter was on strike this morning, and so it took a long time to get the intro put together to get the show going. So you weren't really in the dark. We just met Sonic on the show, and then he told us a little bit about how you guys met on the Friendship Agenda, and now we're just opening the conversation up to the type of shows you guys do on Type 1 Radio Lounge. And the strangeness of synchronicity that you guys should meet online, even though you live
in the same town, yeah.
Yeah.
About a mile or so away, very close.
Yeah, it's very strange. I'm sort of quite of an older kind of guy sort of thing, and I don't really use the internet for sort of finding people. But the one person that I did find just happened to be a gay guy, which was...
Oh, that's me.
Which is okay. Which is okay. Yeah.
I would be the one he's talking about.
Well, you know what they say about people who look for things on the internet are not normally sort of things to do with sync, but that's what I like to look for. Synchronicities.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of those, haven't we?
We certainly. Well, they don't stop either. They just keep happening and coming our way thick and fast, like our good friend Alan Abadassa Green was one of our first major
I wonder if you guys can do me a favor. Try to explain to me what the hell sync is, because I'm confused.
Well, it's the bleed through from other dimensions, is it not? Have you not read the sync?
It's the events that you recognize and identify with other events.
I'll give you a little example. Last night, like, I picked up the sync book last night and looked at I can't remember his name. Who's the dream guy?
Oh,
who Alan's just done an interview with.
Well, go ahead and I will try to remember his name as you talk.
Was it the first sync book or the second sync book?
No, the second one, sync book two.
Oh, the second one. Okay.
Okay, and
he's an old guy from England.
Anthony Peake?
Anthony Peake,
well
done.
There we go.
Yeah.
I picked up and I started reading his thing about the dreams, and immediately I thought about my mother told me a story about... Because do you know that chapter when he gets to read J.B. Priestley's letters?
Yeah.
And one was about... It's about an air crash in 1950 something.
Yeah.
And it turns out that he interviews a guy who was there, or a guy who he met was actually there. So the chances of that happening. But immediately the first thing I thought about when I started reading that was my mother told me a story years before I was born about a Welsh village called Aberfan, where a lot of children were killed by a landslide from a coal mining, coal mine colliery. And she said that she'd had the dream that a lot of people had about this event was going to take place. And funnily enough, at the end of the chapter, he mentioned Aberfan, which was just, I just thought, well, that's sync. That really is sync. That's ideas that are coming through.
Right, I see.
Some kind of consciousness to your brain. So I already thought about that before, and he brought it up. And within the course of his chapter, he brings a lot of instances like that up. Particularly with a guy who witnessed, or it was his wife who said they didn't want to go to the air show because she had a dream there was going to be an air crash there. And they didn't actually see the crash, but it happened the next day.
Right.
It's very, very, very profound chapter.
So you can be sync, but out of sync.
Yeah.
So you're aware of things, but they're not actually going to...
Dream cognitive, he calls it, I believe, or some cognition. Yeah.
I like the versatility of the word sync.
Right.
How, I mean, it means to be in harmony with something at the same time to be have an awareness of the possibility of something coming also.
Yeah, having an awareness of the unconscious connections, like the inspection of knowing you know, but not knowing how you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, when you start training yourself in these instances, they become more apparent and they become more profound. And I don't quite know how you use them for your advantage, but you certainly sort of take something from, you know, there's definitely something in sync. For sure.
Right. There's I don't know if it's beneficial to I don't know if it produces anything except other than insight. I mean, you get a better understanding of how things work, but it doesn't really like make you king. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just increases your awareness, really, doesn't it?
Right. It's more.
Well, it means when things come up and the thing you can actually. I mean, I don't know what I was going to say there. Because you've already, some people say you've already lived a life. So it's picking up on the threads of noticing things that have happened that are going to happen. If that makes sense.
Yeah, Anthony
Pete. That sort of links in with, Damon. The Damon. Living with the Damon, isn't it?
Right. Living the same life over and over is his speculation. Like, and it's not necessarily that you've lived different lives as far as reincarnation go, but you've actually been on a loop for some time now, and then you're kind of remembering the future. But I don't know if I like that model exactly.
No, it's quite claustrophobic, I find.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
But there's something that's like offsetting about it. But it's weird because, you know, I wonder, like, with Sophia Stewart, we were talking about Sophia Stewart earlier, and that's how we met up with Sonic. But some way that she was, like, there's some way that our myth makers, like our modern myth makers, are somehow influenced by what the rest of us are going to need as far as mythologies in the future. Do you know what I mean? Like, Sophia, I like the way that she was okay with the job that Cameron did. You know what I mean? She's like, well, that's just how that was how that movie was supposed to be made. And like the.
Well, she's never actually seen Terminator.
Right. But she wasn't. It's an adaptation. But there's some way that. You know, the events that happen in the future are predicted almost through our media, but also, like, there's this whole mythology playing out, and I don't really see it as, I mean, I know that there's propaganda and predictive programming and stuff, but the real sinks that we look at as far as media goes are almost of it's like having a friend who tells you what's going on in the real world, you know what I mean?
I saw a really interesting interview with Terry Gilliam, and I felt like he described Sync beautifully because he was describing the making of Brazil,
right.
Which was, gosh, many, many, many years ago, before any of us were really talking about Sync and putting Sync books together and all this kind of thing. And the way he described the making of Brazil was that, he had an idea, but it actually... There were things on the desk, and he was kind of seeing that the way things arranged themselves, just suddenly, you know, a piece of work that was open on the book in front of him on the desk would be relevant to something that he was thinking about, and just elements like this were coming in, and he was saying that he wasn't the creator. It was just that he was aware of
he
was the conduit, and he was aware of the signs that were around him, and he was that being the kind of artist manipulating these signs, not manipulating,
but being manipulated.
But using,
they're being manipulated.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's interesting.
Being manipulated and the manipulator, and kind of just being there and aware of something
the process,
else
like,
that was going on around the process. Yeah. And that the film was kind of making itself in a way. And I felt like he described that really well. Probably better than I just did.
That's exactly what I was getting at. That's what I wanted to hear.
We told Sonic when we started the show that last year on May 1st, around the same time, we did two 42-minute episodes in one day, which is unusual. But what made it even more unusual for us, because we're in the United States, both Will and I are in the Mountain West, is that they were international shows. And one was in England and one was in New Zealand. And we're speaking this evening to Alex Robinson, who's in New Zealand. And so basically we're doing thing again. But what's fascinating is in her chapter of the Sync book, Volume 2, that she speaks about that trickster nature of Sync, how there's this unveiling that happens, but then there, you know, Coyote is a trickster, and he'll make something interesting came up in our talk with Trish and Rob McGregor. Also, they wrote about the trickster aspects of Sync and how Sync reveals things to you, but at the same time, it puts you in positions
that's a great chapter. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
I mean, well, yeah. Alan Arbidas has always said that the biggest conspiracy that we do live with is, in fact, the universe that we just look up at.
Yeah.
So, what chance have you got when you've got things like that going on?
Breathing together, the word for conspiracy theory, it's in the word conspiracy theory. Anything that breathes is in it together.
Yeah. I hate to go on about Terry Gilliam. Well, I don't hate him because I really love him.
I just
think he's almost like, for me, he's almost like the godfather of these kind of things, because he's been doing it for so long. Mm. Just naturally, just his artistry is by just noticing the things and then putting them together. He was saying that the film basically made itself. Mm. He just happened to notice the syncs that were going on and put them together. And he produced this piece of what we might call artwork, which was the film Brazil, and all his other films. I just absolutely love all his films, because I feel they have a real sense of this. I don't see them. I mean, a lot of people can say, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy things going on with his films.
I'm sure he definitely,
but I just
I'm sure
find
he
them
definitely
amazing.
Encodes
and that there are things
it.
Going on with them that he has no idea about. They're just coming, and he is being used in some way as a conduit to bring these things out. And I don't mean used in that there's somebody behind a big desk going, call Terry Gilliam, let's get him to make this film. He'll do exactly what we say. It's just that
he's no Kubrick, you're saying.
Well, it's the same.
He's got.
I was going to say it's the same thing. It's just a matter of whether or not it's like, whether or not you're angry at that force or not. If you think that force is malevolent or benevolent.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a lovely lightness about him.
He has got some anger about him as well, though, that definitely, because that's what the whole Python thing was definitely an attack on the very people who were feeding them, so biting the hand that feeds.
And I think that's very important, actually. Definitely, I mean, he is jovial in that, but he has a strength about him. You say an anger, but I think it's a real positive directional strength. And I think that a lot of people find that quite difficult to handle often, because they,
because they watch The X Factor.
Well, for fear of saying Love and Light Brigade, but there we go,
there
I said
go,
it.
Said it.
it can be you can be seen as being too aggressive if you're too direct and too strong in the way
that's
you go about things.
Well, I think a big example of that right now is how Graham Hancock's turned from writing factual books to writing fiction books to get his point across in a more way that can't be attacked.
Right. I see.
Kind of thing.
He's wimped out, is that what you're saying?
Is that after room?
It's not so much wimping out, it's more of a trying to get your point across.
Yeah,
and
taking
not,
another
and
angle.
Not be, you know, because people listen to other people. And if you're going to detract away from,
besides, people will remember fiction more anyways. But people, it will get to people more as a possibility, I think, at least. I mean,
because it creates a story in your head,
right?
Yeah. One of the things in the Sync book that was I enjoyed was when it was gave suggestions for further reading. And I think it was Kyle Hunt that suggested Valis. And another friend of us, Freighter X, had recommended this book, and Philip K. Dick in general. So I'd never actually read any of his stuff. And when I read Ballast, it was just like
mind blown.
Steve Wilner had written it.
Oh, yeah,
you know
Ballast.
It was definitely a book of, well, here's information in pop art, which is relevant to what we're sort of on about. So it's this fiction's definitely important.
And what was he talking about, the Black Knight satellite there?
Well,
the
probably. Well, we'll never know. He's not around anymore, old Philip K. Dick. No. Which is another thing, because Anthony Peake's going to write a book about his life very shortly, isn't he?
We've actually got her coming on in July, the Philip K. Dick's ex-wife, or one of his ex-wives, because there was many of them.
Well, I don't know what's happening to us, but this July, Philip K. Dick is descending upon 42 minutes.
Wow, he just came. He just came out of the universe there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe you'll see on the 21st of July. You'll see you'll have some dream about Sirius,
right?
Like
one of our like shows is. I think I'm going to be gone that week too, as well as Doug. And we'll have somebody record it, but one of the Tuesdays of July is 7/23. So
there you go.
And I always associate that with, 7/23 and 2/3/7 are the same thing to me.
Okay, and then we're back to I wanted you. You made the great joke about Kubrick.
Right.
Are you guys aware of?
Thank you.
Are you guys aware of this new movie called Room 237?
No.
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Hopefully, I know you're able to watch it streaming on Amazon currently, where you kind of rent it. But it's in the theaters right now in the States. But that's the thrust of the film is, you know, what was Stanley Kubrick really trying to say?
Well, have you watched any of Jay Widener's films? Kubrick's Odyssey.
I think he's one of the people interviewed, actually, in the film.
I'll bet he is.
Yeah, because he's just amazing. He knows Kubrick inside out. That film, the first one, which goes into The Shining, which is quite synchronistic with the 237 there, he's showing in the film that he faked the moon landings.
Yes. Yeah, that's a big component. And actually, next week, the show is talking to the director of Room 237. And so we'll get to explore these various quote-unquote conspiracy theories about Kubrick and what, you know, so like you said, Terry Gilliam was being directed by like a universal force, like the art was coming through him, which, you know, I've been, you know, this notion of two worlds. And before Sync, I think in the medieval world, they had the law of correspondences where, you know, there are two worlds and there's this synchrony between the two worlds so that if something, you know, everything is a sign that you need to read. But the funny thing to me is that you said, then you've actually got the malevolent or the wicked, nefarious cabal calling up Stanley Kubrick saying, all right, we need these details in the movie because this is going to signal our...
Even if somebody was... I've been messing with this idea for a while now because, you know, so many people in the Sync community go on and on about Kubrick, but even if he was controlled by the cabal, and I'm not saying there's not a cabal, I think he outsmarted them too.
He definitely did.
Yeah, he got the fuck out of the States.
He carried on for years making the films he wanted to make, and they're all really good films. And when you look into them, as we discovered when we interviewed Jay Widener, that the further you look into it, the more things come out of it, and it gives the films longevity because you watch them again and again and again and again. So maybe it was quite a clever market employ by him to keep his work alive forever.
Yeah, I felt that Eyes Wide Shut, though, was only half a film.
Yeah.
I felt there was so much more.
That's because it was edited after he died.
You can tell that because there is so much more that you just know was going to be in that or should have been and could have been in that film. And it seems, from what we know of the ceremonies and things that are going on, That film just didn't show it at all.
That just showed it all as pleasure, didn't it? It just showed it all as a sort of...
It was over before it started. Yeah, it was like, oh, here's this guy. He gets involved with this thing. He gets excited to find, you know, or interested to find out what's going on. He goes in, he sees what's going on, he comes out, he gets a frightener, he goes back home. And right. That's it, then really? Come on, you know, there was so much more that...
And why did he use such wooden actors as well? Why couldn't he get somebody decent to do it?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, are you referring to Tom Cruise?
Are you referring
to Nicole?
Everyone goes on about Nicole Kidman being this brilliant actress, but she just seems to be the same person every time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, particularly in the dope smoking scene, it was just really like, oh, please.
She plays the same girl as she does in the BMX Bandits.
But there's something strange about the acting in that film in particular.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's almost like they've been told
to kind of... isn't it? It's,
right, there's a flatness. It's like, they're not very dynamic.
It's like they've been given the lines to read when they're not actually with each other, and then they've been put together. Mm. It's almost like that, except that they are together.
Extremely awkward. I have
heard stories about Kubrick's style of directing, though, off camera, that he'll take them away for like a few hours and really like make them depressed. Or like apparently... Partly he locked Shelley Duvall in a freezer when she had the flu to make her like even more sick. So when she was getting attacked by Jack, she was really like...
She was having a nervous breakdown, wasn't she? That's right, when that was going on.
No wonder she was scared.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm going to be thinking about Kubrick all day.
So getting back to Sinks with the Friendship Agenda and the Sink book... a couple of the upcoming books out on Sync Book Press are by Friendship Agenda members. You know, Freighter X with his The Secret War Without Inside Freemasonry, right. and Brandon Ballantyne's the Yogic Gospel of St. Thomas. I think that's going to be out in September.
I don't know if it's a sync necessarily, but... a friend of ours called Dan as well is illustrating Freighter's book. Dan Lish, excellent artist.
And he lives in Brighton too.
Interested? Yeah, contact us.
Well, he contacted us and to get involved with the show.
He's local. He enjoyed the show. He contacted us, and now he's
probably thought,
doing
I bet I could get some artwork out of this.
And he was great. Right. He's great.
Could you run down some of the shows? So I know that Sonic was saying that all these can be accessed in the archive, but, you know, they also, the shows are done live, and so what is the schedule like? What kind of shows are being produced on Type 1 Radio Lounge, or Type 1 Radio, excuse me?
Well, mostly when we get a guest on, we do a bit of research and sort of just get people to try and relax and just talk about the work and... to talk about all sorts of things, you know, what's current and what's, in the sync world or the conspiracy world or the healing world or the, not the love and light healing world, the sort of,
free energy. The
nutritional free energy sort of stuff. And
so that's the lounge. And then on Thursdays we have Retta. She does a show called The Astral Traveller Show where she gets people ringing in talking about their astral travels and things. And then Friday night we have our resident Swami Shivananda Giri, and he does a show called Meditative Living, and he just talks about how to do the meditation. I think this is the first show of its kind where people can be initiated live on the show.
Which night is that?
That's on Fridays.
Well, it's a Friday afternoon for you guys.
Friday afternoon, yeah. So,
3 p.m. Central.
Yeah, 3 p.m. Central. I think Retta's show is 4 p.m. Central. And then the lounge is 3 p.m. Central as well. And then occasionally we have special midweek shows. I think the last one we did, we had our good friend Ken O'Keefe, who just got back from a month-long trip to Iran. So we had a special midweek show to have a chat with him about what was going on over there, because he was talking at the Hollywoodism conference, where they talk about the manipulation between within Hollywood and all the films that they produce. So yeah, he was a very good guest. And we also are open to, if anybody wants to contact me through Facebook, Sonic Aitchison, or through the Type 1 radio there, just and wants to show, we'd love to have you.
Can I just say I do a show as well?
Of course.
No one ever mentions my show.
Tell us about your show.
Yes, please.
My show is called The Detox. And I look at, and it's all about detoxing the mind of mind control. And I sort of look at aspects of just everyday life. It started just before Christmas. I don't do them regularly on a weekly basis because I just can't manage doing a whole show by myself on a weekly basis. But I sort of compile things, and then when I've got enough things together, I'll put a show out. And it's looking at the mind programming that goes on just through our everyday lives of one thing and another. And just looking at how, because mind control is looked at by most people, just your everyday people going out to work and that. If you say, well, actually, you're under mind control, people will look at you and think, well, you're crazy. What do you mean I'm under mind control? They see it as, you know, someone's got to be in front of you with a watch going back into in front of their eyes or something like this, or you would have had to have gone to a psychiatrist and had some kind of treatment. It's that people don't understand that just from cradle to grave, through the school system, through religion, through television,
they don't notice
of mind control.
And they don't notice when they walk into the supermarket that above their heads is the word entrance.
We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you. You've been listening to Sonic, and I'm sorry.
Steve.
Go ahead.
Bye, Chick.
There we go.
Thank you, Will and Doug.
Thank you, Will and Doug. Yeah,
thank you, Will and Doug.
You've been listening to Type 1 Radio Lounge on 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. More information about the work of Type 1 Radio Lounge can be found at blogtalk.com/Type1RadioAshram. For more information about the SyncBook, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website, thesyncbook.com/42minutes. If you like what you hear and would like to support the show, by all means follow the link to the website to the donation page. Thank you and have a wonderful Tuesday, and we'll talk tonight.